to another episode of Hawk Off the Press. My name is Madison Hurutzik. I am the Iowa beat reporter for the Gazette. And this week I am joined by Amy Just, who is a columnist for the Lincoln Journal Star in Lincoln, Nebraska. Because it is rivalry week, it means it's time for the annual Heroes Trophy game between Iowa and Nebraska. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. So let's dive right into things because, well, this game seems to have a lot of implications every year, and this year doesn't have nearly the implications of maybe the past couple years, but still pretty big implications regardless. So let's just start things with a little bit of an overview. Nebraska this year has had its opportunities to step into the national spotlight and has had its opportunities to step into the Big Ten's bigger spotlight, hasn't done it as much. What have you made of this season, particularly since TJ Lateef has taken over as starting quarterback?
Yeah, this by all accounts has been a better season for Nebraska than in years past, right? Last year was the first year they'd made a bowl game in a long time. It was the longest drought in the Power 5, Power 4, whatever you want to call it now. And so this year, a little bit better than that, right? 7 wins going into the final game of the season. They've made progress in a lot of areas. But this game, outside of one year, just a few years ago, has not been a Nebraska success week. It just hasn't. And so in the past few weeks with TJ Lateef taking over for Dylan Raiola, who broke his leg against USC and is out for the year, TJ has looked great in moments. He had, like, that game against UCLA was a masterclass in precision for him and for both Emmett Johnson, their star running back. Last week, less so. I think the Penn State defense doesn't get as much credit as it probably should. And it wasn't as successful for TJ. They did move the ball quite a bit. They had over 300 yards in that game, but it was like empty calories almost because they only scored 10 points, right? So this week, I actually think having TJ Lateef at quarterback gives Nebraska a decent chance because he's more mobile. He can move out of the pocket and make things happen on the fly, or he can tuck it and run himself. He's definitely more of a dual threat quarterback than Dylan Raiola is. Their skill sets are just very different. And so I think that will help Nebraska, but I'm not sure how much it will help in terms of, you know, turning the tide to winning this game.
Right. And this is going to be Iowa's third time playing against a backup quarterback in a matchup this year. And so with Lateef being the backup, I mean, he was thrust into this position pretty dramatically. And you mentioned the UCLA game of him kind of just putting on a masterclass and just showing out what he can do alongside Emmett Johnson. But I mean, when you have such a young quarterback have to take the helm that way, have you noticed his ability to adapt beyond the UCLA game a little bit, or is it more of a gradual development that might need a little bit more offseason time for it to really kind of see some sort of potential growth there?
Yeah, so he's shown that a little bit, right? But against Penn State, of such a good defense, and Iowa is an elite defense, right? And so that is something that I'm going to be really paying attention to this week, just to see how he steps up into that moment. This is his first start at home. Like, because, you know, he came in the USC game, that was at home, but that was a very different situation. And then UCLA, then Idle Week, then Penn State. And so this is his first opportunity to come out of the tunnel as a starter. And I think that may be an interesting thing for him. Having the crowd behind him will help him. I truly believe that. He had the crowd with him at UCLA too. That felt like a neutral site game almost, with how many Nebraska fans were there, especially since that's his hometown too. Penn State was not a neutral site environment. And that disrupted things a little bit in terms of communication. So being back at home, I think, will be a comfort blanket, at least a little bit, for the offense. And that may factor into how things go for him.
Yeah. And you mentioned that Lateef is a little bit more of a dual quarterback than Dylan Raiola was. If Latif isn't able to throw the ball much, it seems that Nebraska's got itself quite the running back this season in Emmett Johnson. He's got over 1,200 rushing yards this season alone, which is an insane number. How have you seen him perform the way that he has to be able to be one of the best running backs in the Big Ten and arguably in the country right now?
Yeah, he has been really fun to watch this season. He's had over 100 yards rushing in the last four games. The last Husker to do that was Ameer Abdullah in 2013. So it's been a while since a Husker's been able to do that. He also, in that UCLA game, had over 100 yards rushing and over 100 yards receiving. He was the first power athlete to do that in a game since Cam Skattebo in Arizona, at Arizona State last year. So he's in some great company with what he's been able to do this season, and it would not surprise me if Nebraska hands him the ball more often than not on Friday, just with how cold it's going to be and just how great Iowa's defense is. That Emmett Johnson will be the X factor, I think, for them.
What about him, particularly this season, has made him so spectacular? Is it his ability to read? Is it his ability to, turn something out of nothing? Is it the fact that he can catch the ball just as much as he's been able to run in some games?
I think it's all of it, but I also think his ability to keep going after first contact is impressive. I would love to know what the number is for his yards that he's gained after he's been hit. You hit him once, he's not going down. You have to bring him down, and not with shoestring tackles, by physically tackling him all the way to the ground. Otherwise, he's going to keep going.
Yeah, and those are always sometimes the hardest running backs or hardest players to bring down to the ground at any point. You mentioned the weather of this game. Not looking great for this. Last I saw was a chance of snow. I believe that's still the case. But it seems to always be that Nebraska and Iowa like to play games in just some insane weather with some insane final score. I mentioned this before we started recording. I want to ask a couple of your favorite Nebraska-Iowa stories and just what makes this rivalry so special. As somebody who's getting to experience this for the first time, what about this rivalry is just what stands out about it so much?
Yeah, it is a physical game that usually means something for like postseason, one way or the other, for one of these teams. So I've been back now. This is my fourth season being back, but I'm from Nebraska originally. I did not go here though. Disclaimer. So it's important to know. So 3 years ago was the last time Nebraska won in this rivalry. And if you had to pick, oh, what team do you think could beat Iowa? It wasn't that one. But I think that team played so free because they had nothing left to lose, right? They were on an interim head coach because Scott Frost had been fired months before that. It was the last game of the season. They were trying to play spoiler for Iowa. And it worked. It's the only win for Nebraska in this series in the last decade. So that game was really like fun to watch, just because of how much that meant to that team to finally have some semblance of success. I think they went like 4-8 that year. It was a rough year. They'd been through a lot. Last year was wild. It was probably one of the coldest moments of my life. Matt Rhule agreed with that today. Offensive coordinator Dana Holgorsen agreed with that earlier this week. That I could not feel my hands. I was trying to write. We were on deadline. It was a night game, and I could not feel my hands. And the way that game ended was eerily similar to the way the game ended the year before. There was a turnover, and Iowa came back to win. Different kicker, didn't matter, still good. It was a really interesting feeling that last year, like even though it was like over a 50-yard field goal, like nobody in that stadium thought he was gonna miss. Like everybody knew he was gonna make it. Even though it was super cold and it's hard to kick when it's that cold, no one thought he was missing that, and he did not. So those are some like recent ones. I know the handshake gate stands out from last year. I personally don't expect that again. You never know, right? But I don't think Ferentz or Matt Rhule want that to happen again. I'm sure it has been discussed behind closed doors by both teams that that's not happening again. But yeah, I just think that this rivalry like finally means something. And I know that sounds bad and I don't want it to come across bad, but like when I so I'm 31. So this like I was here like in the state of Nebraska like as this rivalry was like blossoming. I know there's a long history there, but they were never really in the same conference, and so it didn't really feel like a true rivalry. But the kids playing in this, I say kids, these 20 somethings, teenagers playing in this game, like this is all they know. Like they don't have an attachment to the Nebraska Oklahoma rivalry. Like I don't even have an attachment to that because the heyday of that was like, when I was an infant, right? And so there's a little bit of a connection to the Colorado rivalry because they've played that game a few times. And so there's still some of that left, but their rivalry now is Nebraska Iowa because it has gone on for so long. Like they were young kids when this started. So there's some history here now, and it feels real and it feels meaningful because it is real and meaningful to them because this is the only rivalry that they themselves know, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, it does. And I think you mentioned this a little bit where there is some weight to it. Obviously, this isn't a scenario where either team it's a ball or your season's over kind of game. Both teams have 7 wins right now. It's an 8-win season on the line here, which doesn't seem like a ton in the grand scheme maybe of the modern college football era, but to end your season with 8 wins and one of them be a win over your rival, there's definitely some stake there. I know there's also some recruiting that goes into this as well with the two sharing the border. And so I know there's a number of Iowa players that have spoken up. Logan Jones, Iowa center this week, talked about, he grew up wanting to go to Nebraska, didn't get his offer from Nebraska till the day after he got his offer from Iowa. And so there's a lot at stake there and a lot emotionally there. So I can understand where that perspective comes from, especially in, the last decade, 15, maybe even 2 decades of just this being a rivalry that's cultivated for this generation of college football players.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that this game means so much to the people who are involved in it because it's what they've known. And yeah, it's personal, right? Like, I can't imagine how frustrating it would be to be, a high school kid wanting to go to some school and them not looking at you until later. Like, that's emotional, right? Like it's only human to want to prove them wrong, right? So there's a lot of that in this rivalry, especially with the Nebraska and the Iowa kids. There are some Nebraska kids that play for Iowa, some Iowa kids that play for Nebraska. So there's a lot of like personal attachment to this game, and I think that it only makes the rivalry better.
Now, so here's the question though. All right, the last 7 games have all been decided by one score, whether it be a field goal or a touchdown. Do you foresee this being a similar game this year? And
I
how's that one?
do. I do. I think that Iowa's defense is so good. But for as good as Iowa's defense is, Iowa's special teams, I mean, Caden Wettjen is like the best returner, period. Not just in college football right now, but I think you can, no, honestly, I'm being serious. I think you can make the case that he's one of the best the sport has ever seen. Like he is so good. Like the biggest compliment you can get as a cornerback or a kick and punt returner is that no one goes after you. Like they do not
Yeah,
throw to you, they do
absolutely.
not kick to you because they are afraid of what you can do to them. And so, like last week, I was shocked that Michigan State decided, oh, it's a great, let's kick to Caden Wettjen. What a great idea. No, terrible idea. Don't do that. And
I say, I think everybody was shocked that they continued to kick to Weijin.
so he, yeah, Weijin is so good, but I don't, if he doesn't get the ball, That's a win for Nebraska. But I think the same can be said for Iowa kicking to Nebraska. Ja'Cory Barney is a difference maker. Kenneth Williams is a difference maker. And I think this game will be won based off of field position and how special teams sets up the offense for both sides. Nebraska finally has a competent special teams unit. I say that now. Maybe they'll make a mistake. I don't know. They did last week against Penn State. But the biggest area of growth for Nebraska this season from last year's game has been special teams. And so I don't foresee there to be a catastrophic meltdown on special teams like there was for Nebraska last season, because it's hard to get worse than what happened in that game.
Right, of course. And I think one of the things about Iowa special teams that has stood out is it's not necessarily just a couple instances where teams will kick to Wiegent and then they'll just take it and score. It's every game he's been given an opportunity, has found a way to do something out of it. And he's now tied for the most punt returns for a touchdown in the NCAA with Vakari Swain from South Carolina. So that's two very good returners right there, if you say so. And the both of them were nominated as finalists for the Jet Award this past week as well. But you mentioned special teams and getting field position. So that's kind of where I want to go a little bit and talk a little bit about Nebraska's defense. Iowa's had a few instances this year where their offense hasn't been able to start very quickly. It's a commonality that's happened in Big Ten games. Iowa likes to receive the ball first to start games. They're usually the ones to have first possession. And there hasn't been an opportunity where the Hawkeyes have gotten on the board this year. Kickoffs are a little bit different than maybe just punting in the middle of the game. But I'm curious, when you look at this Nebraska defense, how do they have an opportunity to stop the offense early for the Hawkeyes, prevent that first score, and put the Nebraska offense in better field position for their first possession of the game?
Yeah, I think the key for Nebraska's defense is trying to stop the run. Nebraska's defense has not had much success in that category all year long. Their secondary, though, has been locked down, has been one of the better secondaries in the nation in terms of limiting opposing offenses. Now, some of that is due to, well, if Nebraska can't stop the run, why would you throw? But some lockdown corners, lockdown safeties, are all over Nebraska's defense. So I think the key for that is Nebraska just finding a way to stop the run and be good on third down, right? Not allow Iowa to extend drives. You saw that last week with Penn State. Nebraska had difficulty with anything that Penn State was throwing at them, especially in the run game. So I think that's going to be the key. For Nebraska to try to slow down Iowa is to become a wall, but we will see how that goes. But they haven't had much success there all season.
When you say that they haven't had much success, is it a consistency issue? Is it just a general issue? Is it a youth or an experience issue that you've noticed? Is there something you can pinpoint to that specifically, or has it just been just a gaping hole all season?
Above it is youth. Nebraska lost two of their best defensive linemen last season. Both of them are in the league this year. So replacing them, we knew it was going to be, everyone knew it was going to be difficult. You cannot just go out and replace Ty Robinson and Nash Hutmaker. But we're on, this is the 12th game of the season. Like, you got to figure it out. And last week was tough. It feels like low-hanging fruit to keep talking about how Nebraska can't stop the run, but it's a fact. And I have a feeling that aspect of the game is going to be really, really important, one way or the other, in determining who's going to win this game.
And you mentioned, the secondary being very, very solid throughout this season. Iowa's receiving game hasn't been up to par, at least from what the expectation was at the beginning of this year. Do you foresee the ability for, some of this Nebraska secondary to try and take advantage of that? If so, how do you see that kind of playing out?
Yeah, if Iowa wants to throw the ball, good luck. It wouldn't, especially if you're trying to throw to like Sia Wright, for example. He's been incredible this season. Like I said, with comparing it to Wiegent earlier, people don't throw to Sierre because he's going to make you pay. So if that ends up happening, it wouldn't surprise me if Sierre has a turnover or a PD or a PBU. It just wouldn't surprise me. He's really, really good. He has a future in the NFL. I truly believe that. But there's a lot of guys on in that secondary that can make plays and make you pay. But I don't think I was gonna need to throw though. I think if they have success running the ball, they should keep doing that.
It seems like a pretty simple game plan at that point when you put it in I guess blatant terms like that.
Easier said than done, though, right? Gotta go out
Right,
and do it.
absolutely.
But if I was an opposing coach playing Nebraska, that's what I would do.
It's, yeah, I mean, like I said, seems simple to say, and then you get put in this situation and you're like, oh, maybe we'll throw a screen pass here or a short pass. Who knows? And Iowa has shown a little bit of the offensive creativity against USC being one of them. They ran like a Philly special like play against USC that ended up working, which was very entertaining. I'm not a Philly fan, but I'm from the East Coast, so I appreciated the little bit of the East Coast reference just being out here in the Midwest. But you've seen the creativity before. It's just, as you were mentioning, if you're able to just take the low-hanging fruit, sometimes that's the best way to go about it.
Make it harder than it needs to be.
Exactly. All right. So, a couple more questions for you, Amy. First things first, I like to ask this with everybody. What is the one thing for Iowa that they need to do with 100% confidence to be able to pick up a win in Lincoln? And then I'll ask you the flip side as well. And I'm going to say don't run the ball because we've just broke that down a little bit. So let's try and come up with something a little bit different here.
Did you say for the offense or just in general?
But in general, what does Iowa need to do to be able to win? What does Nebraska need to do to win?
Yeah, I think Iowa needs to. Let's see. This is a great question. Iowa needs to not kick the ball to Jaghori Parnay, and Iowa needs to find a way to force turnovers. That's how Iowa has won the past couple of years. And Iowa needs to run the ball.
All right. And then on the flip side, what would Nebraska need to do to be able to beat Iowa in this situation?
Not kick the ball to Caden Wejgen. Seriously.
100%. It
Seriously.
seems, again, it goes back to the, it seems like low-hanging fruit, but it absolutely is a correct statement.
Kick the ball out of bounds. Don't give him an opportunity. He's so good at what he does. Nebraska also needs to, again, limit turnovers. That's been an issue in this rivalry for the past several years. And Nebraska also needs to find ways to extend drives.
When you say extend drives, are you talking about third down conversions? Are you just talking
Yep.
about specifically the third down conversions? Okay.
Third down conversions, find a way to, chew up the clock. Less opportunities for Iowa to possess the ball, the better.
And then you mentioned this earlier, so I want to make sure that we do talk about this a little bit. You mentioned, I guess, the no handshake gate, as you called it earlier when we talked about it. Obviously, with these kinds of rivalries, emotions are huge. And Matt Rhule and both Kirk Ferentz have now said, they have a lot of respect for each other's teams and what they've done as a program. Obviously, emotions are always going to be super high. You mentioned we really don't think there's going to be a situation where neither team shakes hands come Friday afternoon. But how do you see emotion tying into it?
I don't think it's a good idea to do that again.
I don't think either side would want to try and test fate like
No.
that again.
No. But it will be emotional. I do foresee guys playing through and beyond the whistle. There might be some chirping, some pushing and shoving, some extracurriculars at the bottom of dog piles, that type of thing. But we cannot have ha another handshake gate. We cannot. That needs to be left in 2024.
I think it will. I think it will be. But I do agree with you that it's not a rivalry week without a little bit of extra emotion tied into things.
Yeah, there'll be some spiciness, there'll be some chippiness, some extra zest as as we say, but yeah, it's got to be a little bit more disciplined than last year. That look, I went to Kansas. I have seen firsthand what has happened when you don't shake someone's hand. They go all Baker Mayfield on you. That, so I have known since then, but that is a stupid thing to do. But yeah, no. There will be some zing, there will be some spice, it will be emotional. It's a rivalry game. There's a lot that goes into it, but I think it'll be more on the field of play than that.
Then leading up to or all of that kind of stuff for sure. All right, so what's your score prediction? And I'm gonna add this because it seems to be the tale of the last couple of years. How do you think the score happens? Is it gonna be another game-winning field goal? Is it gonna be a pick turnover into a long, lengthy drive? How do you foresee your chosen score prediction playing out?
Yeah, because so if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm saying 13 to 10. That's been the score the last 2 years. Why not? Third time's a charm, right? I think Iowa takes it. I just based off of last week, I just think that Nebraska's gonna come close, but not quite there. Wouldn't surprise me if it's another game-winning field goal for Iowa and just playing out the exact same way things have turned out the past couple of years.
I'll say, I think I went 17-13 Iowa with my prediction. I was just like, I feel like a fourth quarter touchdown drive just seems kind of fitting for Iowa to just be able to do it rather than a field goal. But who knows? Maybe it is going to be another Drew Stevens field goal, second week in a row, second season in a row that he'll end the season with a game-winning field goal. Who knows? But
Yeah,
Amy, thank
nothing.
you.
Yeah, nothing would surprise me. This rivalry is always full of really weird things. It's a weird one, even though I was the favorite, overwhelmingly so. It wouldn't surprise me if this is close. I'm predicting it to be close. This rivalry is usually close. But again, nothing would surprise me. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. All right. Well, Amy, thank you so much for joining us this week. We appreciate you having on. This is a great conversation. If you like this content, you can follow the Hawk Off the Podcast pod. Ooh, excuse me. If you like this, you can follow the Hawk Off the Press podcast. We post every single week talking all things Iowa athletics. You can also follow my free newsletter that is at thegazette.com, also with the same name, Hawk Off the Press, for more inside content. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Not a Gazette subscriber? There's no better time to support local journalism. View our latest deals for print and digital offerings at thegazette.com/subscribe. Stay informed. Be empowered. Subscribe to the Gazette today at thegazette.com/subscribe.